want to be present at this meeting, seeing that Land Bank and the leadership of the bank is here to do a presentation. Because the Land Bank is also operating in my province, in my region, in my constituency, the biggest one, Northern Cape, 350 kilometers of ocean, beaches, the clearest seawater in South Africa you will find there. No sewage pipes running into the sea, into the ocean. It's clean. Ask Professor Danny Brunk of the University of Stellenbosch. He did the research. And we are very passionate about that. About our environment, just as the bank is passionate about agriculture and stimulating economic growth. Are there any apologies from the standing committees, members? Ellen? Bobo? Let it be noted? Nothing?
I said apology.
Apology?
Yeah. This will leave at some stage. She needs to go somewhere, but not now.
Noted. Apology for Honorable Karim. He's now on a flight back to Cape Town, in abroad for a day or two, and he will be in the debate this afternoon. So he is on his way. From the select committee, Solani, there's no apologies. So welcome to all the members. Honorable members, you received documentation. It's quite a volume. We received yesterday, seeing that we are participating in the debate this afternoon. So without waste of time, Mr. Molotu, welcome with your whole team. For a couple of years, you were my neighbor in Acacia Park. now you've got another hat on, leading the team of Land Bank as the executive chairperson. So welcome. You can introduce your team and immediately take us through your presentation. If possible, honorable members, let's try and be out here 12:15. There are members that want still to go through their speeches.
Please, sir.
I know. It includes me as well. Thank you. Mr. Malotu.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'm going to introduce my team on my right.
Thank you so much, Honorable Shivambo. On my right is the CEO of the Land Bank, Mr. T.P. Nhlosho, and on my left is the CFO of the Land Bank, Benny van Rooy. Next to him is the Executive Director responsible for strategy, that's Sydney Soundy, and next to him is the Company Secretary, Ms. Audumi Mashumi.
You'll find the pictures in the book as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I see it's a men's choir, but we'll call it Gender Commission.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. We have got women on our executive. Unfortunately, they are not part of our team today. I think at one stage we brought some of them to engage with the committee. Without much ado, Chairperson, I just want to take this opportunity to appreciate the space that you have afforded us to engage with you. We really derived much value from the oversight role of this committee and the feedback that you provide to the Land Bank. We go back and report on some of the critical issues that we might have raised, for instance, on youth empowerment, women empowerment, and then we grappled with those issues and tried to find ways of incorporating those concerns into our strategy documents and ensuring that even in our development impact, we try to assess whether we indeed are making progress on those issues. Chairperson, I'm just going to make some few comments and some of it, I think a large portion will be found in our presentation, but I just want to place some emphasis on it. Two things: financial sustainability of the Land Bank and corporate governance. And indicate how the two are related to each other. There's a strong correlation between the two, and we understand why as the land bank, we would never want to compromise on corporate governance because it has got a huge bearing on our financial system in Namibia. When we joined the land bank, myself and TP, we joined at the same time, the CEO, January of 2015, we were faced with a liquidity crisis. Because, and I will explain briefly, the CFO will go into detail about that. We were faced with a liquidity crisis because the bank had a serious problem of that a huge chunk of our debt was short-dated debt. So essentially we are financing short debt. Was short-dated debt. So essentially we are funding long-term investments using short-dated debt. That's the situation we found. So students of finance would call it an asset and liability mismatch. So that's what we faced. And the shareholder had to assist us because there are liabilities that are due that we need to be honored. And we're talking huge sums of money. So the shareholder had to assist us by providing us guarantee. And the team that you see in front of you, which is basically new, the CFO joined later, had applied their mind to this issue and worked hard to address this problem that I've mentioned of short debt, which I think is a problem that even Moody's had indicated, that part of the weakness that they established in the land bank was this issue of the short debt. So they used the government guarantees to lengthen the maturity profile of the debt to the extent that you'd find that the short dated debt to this point would be less than 50%. It was more than 50%. So that on its own present major problems. Then I'll come to it when I mention and connect it to the issue of corporate governance. We had a second incident of Future Growth, an asset management company based in Cape Town, which suspended its lending to all SOEs. And I would assume that it was largely as a result of the disquiet around matters of state capture, procurement lapses and corporate governance lapses in SOEs. And for us, if you relate it to my first point, that we are largely dependent on institutional investors and bankers for funding. So even at this stage, if one have to say without any doubt that if we had a run on the bank by institutional investors and bankers, we'll close business in the next week. In the next 78 hours, we'll shut it. So the issue of corporate governance for us is key, and we can't compromise on that because that's what ensures our financial sustainability, because we are largely funded by institutional investors and bankers. When Future Growth suspended their lending to SOEs, we immediately, the three of us, immediately engaged with Future Growth, opened our books, and ensured to them that we adhere to the best standards of corporate governance. To the extent that we are the first SOE that they lifted, the suspension. And wrote us a letter to indicate that after engaging with us, that we have policies on politically exposed persons, and that we have got sound governance structures, and that our procurement practices were above board. They were therefore comfortable to continue with lending to the land bank. So I'm just mentioning it because from the land bank side, we can't compromise on issues of corporate governance. It's not a nice to have. It's our own survival. Our own financial sustainability hinges largely on good corporate governance. If it collapses, then we have to close the bank because there's no way that institutional investors would advance pensioners' money to the land bank because we use the money to own land to farmers. So, honourable members, that's the point that I think I just thought we need to emphasise. There might be a lot of people talking certain things about the land bank, but we want to assure you, we have got a policy on politically exposed persons. So if Honourable De Beer, Honourable Shivam, or any other honourable member apply to the land bank for funding, we won't reject it, but it will be subjected to the most strictest scrutiny and we will ensure that our evaluation of that proposal, because all South Africans have equal rights. So we have it's not in our business to discriminate against them, but our due diligence
has to be enhanced and has to be robust when we deal with politically exposed persons, because we can't compromise, and that's the assurance that we have given to show. So if you want, for instance, if you want to see our policy on politically exposed persons, it's on our website. That's the assurance that we have given to our investors that we would adhere to the best standards of corporate governance. So without much ado, Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to the CEO and the CFO to take us through the presentation.
Right, I'm going to give you 35 minutes. Your Chairperson used the first 10. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. We will make the presentation, and it will be in two parts. I'll cover the first couple of slides that talk to the strategy of the bank, the development impact outcomes of for the year that we are talking about here, as well as some kind of a forward-looking perspective. And then to conclude the presentation, I will ask my colleague, the Chief Financial Officer, to run quickly through the numbers towards the end of the slide presentation. So if I may start, I'm on slide number 5, which is an overview of the content of the presentation, the aspect that I'm going to cover. So in the interest of time, Chairperson, I will move on to the next slide, which is slide number 6. And again, this particular slide, Chairperson, simply places the mandate of the bank in the context of the policy objectives of government. All that we are saying here is in terms of the Land Bank Act, we are expected to play a role in advancing objectives relating to economic growth by supporting agriculture, supporting employment creation, thirdly contributing to greater inclusion or transformation. And these objectives, Chairperson, the point that we're making here is that they are aligned to the national objectives that are encapsulated in the National Development Plan. So you'll see, Chairperson, I won't be reading out the content of the slide. I will be conveying the message points. So, and the same message goes on to the next slide, which is slide number 7, regarding the scope of the Land Bank Act and how it aligns to issues of food security and environmental sustainability. So the first two slides really appreciating our scope of responsibility. Now, on slide number 8, Chairperson, the point that we would like to make, and this is what Mr. Moloto touched on, was that in 2015, there was a significant restructuring that took place at the Land Bank in terms of strategy review, organizational remodeling, and a refinement of the institutional infrastructure. And basically, what we sought to do with the restructuring was, in the first instance, from a strategy perspective, to try and reorientate the organization towards greater developmental impact, but also to maintain the trajectory on financial sustainability as well as governance. And then we went on to invest a lot, Chairperson, and the details thereof are contained in this annual report in terms of the kind of things that we did to invest in the architecture of the organization for risk management, because a bank such as ours is a very risk-sensitive institution. The organization can very easily lose itself if it doesn't manage risk in a competent way. And then, of course, the third area of investment was with regards to people, attracting the best possible talent, particularly in the new units that we had created relating to specialized finance as well as credit management. So this is just a recap contextualizing the results that we are talking to. Moving on to slide number 9, Chairperson. And remember, here we are talking about the financial year ended March 2017. And the first point that we are making in terms of placing this annual report in context is that the 2 years prior to this period under review were difficult years because for all intents and purposes the sector was in recession, and therefore this year that we are reporting on was a year of recovery. And then by God's grace, towards the end of 2016, the country began to see a return of decent rainfalls, and therefore we saw a sharp recovery in the hectareage planted, and slowly but surely the sector began to improve. But we saw continuing pressures on the poultry industry during that period, particularly on two fronts. One was the prevalence of bird flu diseases in certain parts of the country, and in the second instance, the carryover effects of the higher prices of inputs, particularly feed costs, because grain had become expensive during the drought period prior to this one. And then, of course, meat prices coming under pressure, because during the drought period, what farmers had done was to sell off their animal holdings. And when that happens, it reduces the stock holding and therefore pushes prices upwards. But interestingly, the sector continued to perform well in terms of export performance. And as we know, particularly the horticulture, fruits, and so on, that are export-oriented industries. The last point, Chair, is that we have an insurance company which is a subsidiary of the insurance of the Land Bank. It's called the Land Bank Insurance Company, LBIC. And so what we are reporting, and the numbers are contained in the report, is that there was an increase in the claim ratio because there was drought. And then because there was little planted during the period leading to this one, we saw lower levels of premium write-ups. Just a highlight to say our LBIC or insurance company came under pressure during the period. The next slide, Chairperson, slide number 10. Simply, what we are depicting here is a picture that we try and use to say the one way of looking at the land bank is to look at it in terms of its developmental impact as well as its financial return performance. And we think that as an institution, is certainly our results bear testimony to that. We are at the moment, we are not reliant on government for grants. We are a self-financing institution. But certainly our profit performance is not high, like, come again? that can be raised, I suppose. But what we are hopefully aspiring for is that over time, the land bank could be both a high development institution, but also an institution with higher levels of earnings in order for its financial stability to continue to be underpinned. Moving on to the next slide, Chairperson, slide number 11. We are just underlining that indeed the important thing for us to do for our financial sustainability to be maintained is that one, we continue to invest prudently in the sector. In other words, we are robust in terms of our assessment of the credit applications. But we go on further to be effective in terms of the structuring of risk. In other words, putting mitigation measures around the transactions that we finance. But most important is the fact that we use our balance sheet to raise money. Although the land bank is owned by government through the National Treasury, the last time we had a capital injection into the land bank was sometime in 2008-2009. Since then, on an annual basis, we raise money from the capital markets using the strength of our balance sheet quality. And so we raise money from the World Bank, from the African Development Bank, but also from the local capital markets, the fund managers. We raise approximately in the region of about 4 or 5 billion rand year on year. And this we raise on the strength of our balance sheet. Moving on to the next slide, Chairperson, Mr. Moloto touched on this particular one, and that is that we continue to maintain unqualified audits. We are audited by the Auditor General. In the second instance, Mr. Moloto touched on this. We had an incident where Future Growth stopped its funding to the SOE sector, and it was unfortunate, and this is what we said to Future Growth. It was unfortunate that they chose to, if I can use this word, to lump us, ourselves, Land Bank, the Development Bank of Southern Africa, as well as the IDC, to lump us together with other major SOEs that we know from publicly available information that they have significant problems around governance. But in any event, we addressed those, as Mr. Moloto said, resolved the issues, and our funding relationships with Future Growth and other investors have been restored. We made revisions to our domestic medium-term note. This is the program that is listed on the stock exchange through which we raise capital from the markets. And then our investment rating has been maintained by our rating agencies. And yes, during that particular year, we were successful in raising somewhere in the order of about 7 billion rand in funding capacity in the form of funding lines that we are then able to lend out to the agricultural sector. In terms of development impact outcomes, Chairperson, I'm on slide 13. The highlights are that we disbursed about 4.8 billion rand in new money, new facilities that we extended into the agricultural sector, excluding the revolving facilities that are in place where our farmers and other agricultural enterprises draw money. It was new capital advance into the sector. We approximate or we calculate based using our economic estimates that probably in the region of 15,000 or so jobs were created during that period. We also supported the poultry sector because what we chose to do was not to divest, but rather to work with our counterparty clients who are poultry clients to continue to extend facilities to them, to give them relaxed terms in terms of grace periods and so on, so that we could maintain jobs in that sector. And then at the beginning of the year, we set ourselves a target to say what we have defined as the developmental sector. In other words, majority black-owned businesses or the ones that have a B rating in excess of 4. We said to ourselves we would like to advance about 2 billion rand as a target during the year. We closed the year with an advance of, in total, of 2.4 billion rand to clients that are categorized as transformative or developmental, with the definition that I've just mentioned now, Chair. Our Land Bank Insurance Company undertook a program which is called Black Brokers Development Program. I couldn't believe this. When I joined the bank, the brokers, the people who sell our insurance products, we had none of those brokers being black. And so my colleagues in the Land Bank Insurance Company embarked on a program where increasingly part of the business, the insurance business that is written out by brokers is from a number of brokers that we have developed who come from the black community. We arranged a special facility for drought. The reason why we call it a special facility is simply because it had relaxed terms. It was priced lower, less than prime by about 3 percentage points, but also had a grace period in terms of time. During this year, it was a total 400 million rand facility. During this period that we are reporting on, just over 100 million rand of that was drawn and disbursed. As of today, the entire 330 million as of today has since been used of that special facility that was created for drought relief. It is a debt facility, it's not a grant program. It's just that the terms in terms of the period of repayment as well as the pricing are concessional. And then we financed some projects on new irrigated land. So in summary, these were the highlights of what we call development impact outcomes. our financing model, Chairperson, I'm on 14, and I'm talking here our initiatives to finance more into the sector. We use a lot of special purpose financial intermediaries. Let me make an example. So we have a project, for instance, in Malelane, which is a joint venture between us and TSB. They call themselves TSB now. They used to be Transvaal Sugar Board, where there's a number of black emerging farmers who farm sugar cane. So we created a special purpose vehicle in partnership with TSB. We have advanced a total amount of about 200 million rand, and TSB are our operational partners on the ground who help the farmers with the plantations, the management of the growing, and the management of pesticides. In other words, the entire production season. That is what we call a full service model through our financial intermediaries. And of course, value chain financing means working through our partners on the ground who have integrated value chains. For example, Chairperson, in my province, the province where I come from, the Free State, somewhere just outside Kroonstad, there is a farmer there, he's a major.
Where
is it's outside Kroonstad, it's a farm located.
Don't be
the farm is called Cernik.
Yeah. No, just carry on.
The farm is called Cernik. No. We have no involvement with that. So what is the model there is a strong farmer, well established. He has a standing herd of more than 10,000 cattle. He has a feedlot. They run an abattoir as well, and they are integrated along the value chain. We build an ecosystem around them of about 50 emerging farmers, and the model is simple. We provide a facility. The initial facility was 50 million that we grant to the individual smallholder farmers, and then they are supported by this established farmer in terms of veterinary services, feeding programs, running a breeding program, taking the cows to the feedlot for fattening up, and eventually taking them through to the abattoir so that they have access to the entire channel. It was a model that really we piloted. We are hoping to scale it up with time. We have learned our lessons. It was done successfully. Phase one of it, we hope to scale it up. So those are the kind of things that we are trying to do on the ground to try and get new generation farmers integrated into the mainstream. Let me move forward, Chairperson, and move to slide 15. Just taking a forward look, the first point that we would like to mention is that as a country, we are struggling to establish strong institutional synergies to deliver land reform projects on scale and on a sustainable basis. We are a development bank. Our primary role is funding. We have the Department of Land Reform, which acquires farms. We have the Department of Agriculture, which plays a particular role. We have the Department of Water Affairs, which regulates licenses with regards to water access. All I'm saying is, these partners, we can do better, we can improve in terms of synergies. At the moment, yes, we are trying, but in our view, we don't think that the synergy is as strong as it could be. The second thing that we mentioned, and it was demonstrated by the few examples that I mentioned now, that we try and promote a lot of joint ventures as envisaged in the National Development Plan. Promote a lot of joint ventures between established agriculture and new entry participants into the sector, because by so doing, we truly strengthen each other and build access into value chains as envisaged in the National Development Plan. There is this concept which came out of the PAKISA program, which is called blended financing. What we are working on, and Chairperson, we haven't concluded yet, is a situation where what we have observed is that when we try and help new entry farmers, majority black, what very often happens is that, let's say a person applies to us for a loan of 50 million. We do our financial analysis and assessment of the transaction, and we make a determination based on prudent assessment that no, of the 50 million that the person is asking for, the debt that can be carried by this entity is maybe 35 million. So they have a gap of about 15. So very often, we then look up to them and say, do you have the 15 million rand? And we can say here, confidently so, that not many black people have 15 million rand around to then contribute by way of equity into a project like I've just described. So the proposal that is on the table and it's under discussion between us and DAF is that perhaps some of the grants that are in DAF could be repurposed to close this funding gap as I've just described in this particular example. And so doing, we blend the financing. You blend grants together with debt in order to create a viable financing mechanism. Because from a responsible lending perspective, it wouldn't be prudent to simply give a loan of 50 million when we know, based on sound financial analysis, that the debt carrying capacity of that particular enterprise is somewhere in the region of about 30 million or 35 million in this example that I've just made. We come across these examples every day, and it's one of those hurdles that we need to overcome. A national insurance subsidy scheme of some sort is required. We saw an absolute decimation of emerging farmers during the drought period in 2015 moving into 2016 because of the drought, because people cannot afford premiums. So the suggestion that has been made is that perhaps the Department of Agriculture, the National Treasury, should consider a subsidy scheme that is all-encompassing, where every farmer in South Africa could be covered and government perhaps subsidizes the premiums. For instance, maybe an emerging farmer who is still finding their feet, government could consider, I'm just making an example, subsidizing 60 cents to every rand of premium. But maybe for an established farmer, subsidizing 35 or 40 cents to every 1 rand. But ensuring that everyone in the sector is covered in there. That particular proposal has been documented. It was developed in consultation between ourselves, the National Treasury, as well as the Department of Agriculture. But the sponsoring department is DAF. And so that proposal is there now. As to how it evolves, we can only wait from where we sit. Lastly, Chairperson, we are doing some youth enterprise program. We have just completed it now. It's a design. What we are seeking to do is to match youth who are keen on farming with farming opportunities, land opportunities. And the discussion between us and land reform is that they would make land available, we would fund the young people, we would arrange training, arrange the funding, and so on and so on. This is a scheme that we are just developing now. So it's combining land, market access, and management support, and bringing that into a development equation. So, Chairperson, with those few words, I don't know if there were a few, perhaps, Benny, I've eaten a lot into your time, but I trust you will be able to run through your numbers very quickly. Chairperson, I thank you, and I'm handing over to my colleague, the CFO.
Mr. Van Rooy.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members. And I promise not to make this a death by number session. They can be quite exciting. Chair, both my board chairman and the CEO has made reference to the financial sustainability of the land bank, and the purpose of this part of the presentation is to point out the matters that emphasize that talks to the financial sustainability of the organization. As an introduction, point out that the Land Bank is one of the few SOBs that can raise money in the capital and debt markets without using government guarantees. Less than 10% of the Land Bank's total liability portfolio of today, approximately 40 billion rand, is government guaranteed. So we've got quite a good standing in the domestic markets. To amplify that, we've also recently raised facilities from the KfW, a German development bank, as well as the European Investment Bank, where we've raised, again, unguaranteed funding. The tenure of these loans are 10 and 12-year loans, which we can utilize to fund emerging farmer or SMME-type lending in the agricultural sector. So from that point of view, there's a lot of acknowledgement that the Land Bank is a successful SOE in the South African context, and we get very strong support from domestic asset managers and the domestic capital and debt markets, again on an unguaranteed basis. However, Chair, and if I can refer members to slide 19, which is the one slide I will use in my presentation, that shows the highlights of our financial results for the year ended 2017. There's reference to a published basis and like-for-like basis. Just briefly, in the 2016 and 2017 financial years, as TP alluded to, the Land Bank undertook an organisational review, and we've ring-fenced those expenses related to organisational review to show a like-for-like comparison. Members, the first row with the heading net interest margin is a very important number that indicates the bank's profitability. The net interest margin is the difference between the interest that the bank receives from loans that it extends to clients and the interest that the bank pays on funding that it raises from its investors. And that is at 3.1%, implying that the bank on average extends loans at a premium of 3.1% over and above the cost of funding that it raises. Now, Chair, this point is important because the Land Bank is often asked, why can't you extend loans to farmers at 2% interest or 3% interest or 4% interest, a much lower interest rate? Now, to explain this situation, members, is that we raise funding at an average funding cost of about 8.5%. So if we extend a loan at 2% or 3% and 4%, we incur a loss on that loan. It's like having a clothing store and you sell jeans and you buy the pair of jeans for 200 rand and you sell the jeans for 80 rand. It can be done when there's a sale, but on a sustainable basis you'll incur losses. So we have one program in the bank that we refer to as the Retail Emerging Market Program, where we invest approximately 100 million rand a year from our own funding into this project, where we can extend loans, and TP mentioned some of those projects that we've embarked on, to emerging farmers at an interest rate of 4%. But unfortunately, we can't do that on a large-scale basis. We can't extend a billion rand or five billion rand of loans at that rate, because given our cost of funding of 8.7%, we will incur losses. So it's important to understand that from a structural point of view, the funding composition of the Land Bank is more or less the same as a commercial bank, rightly or wrongly, but that's the reality of the situation. Now, that 3.1% net interest margin or 3% interest margin is necessary to keep the bank profitable. Because of every 1 rand that we raise, that we earn from an interest net interest point of view, we roughly pay 50 cents in cost, in operating expenses. We refer to a cost-to-income ratio that's later on the page, is slightly above 50%. So that then leaves about half the interest as profit, and then we also need to carry what we refer to as cost of credit. So we from time to time get bad debts that we have to write off. We from time to time customers fall behind. We need to raise provisions. And that also plays a part. That caters for roughly half the remaining balance. So of the roughly 1.2 billion net interest income that the bank generates, we pay 600 million rand in cost, expenses, operating expenses, another between 200 and 300 million for cost of credit, and we generate a profit of somewhere between 300 and 400 million. That's simplistically the operating or profitability model of the Land Bank at this point in time. Some of the other numbers on this slide points to cash balances that we maintain. It points to a non-performing loan ratio. A non-performing loan ratio is the loans that are in arrears for more than 90 days. It's a standard definition that banks use to classify problematic loans. That ratio has reduced significantly over the last few years. TP mentioned the drought that the bank was exposed to the country was exposed to in 2015-2016, when almost 10% of our loans became problematic or in arrears for more than 90 days, to the end of the 2017 financial year, where that ratio was less than at about 7.7%. It's now at about 6.5%. So the bank has a strong asset portfolio, good quality assets that generate sustainable returns. Members will also note that there's, in the middle of that slide, there's reference to a banking profitability and an insurance profitability. Just to note that both the Land Bank, who extends loans to the agricultural sector, as well, the two insurance entities, the one entity provides crop insurance cover to the agricultural sector, the other entity provides life insurance policies or sells life insurance policies to the agricultural sector, that both those entities are also profitable, which is also a pleasing aspect, because the crop insurance business was impacted by substantially high claims as a result of the drought of the 2015-2016 season. TP did mention that the 2016-2017 season, from a weather point of view, was much more encouraging, better weather conditions. Unfortunately, better weather conditions also gets associated with hail and hail damage. So the short-term insurance business had drought-related claims for the first half of the financial year and hail-related claims for the second half of the financial year, but still the insurance businesses remain profitable. Chair, I'm going to skip a few slides because the slide 20 and 21 also points to the profitability of the organization. Safe to say that the bank and the group generated healthy profits. The same with regard to slide 22. Slide 23 is a brief synopsis of the balance sheet of the organization. To point out that the bank has extended net loans, that was at the end of the 2017 financial year, 41 billion rand. The funding liabilities at that point in time roughly 37 billion rand, and as TP mentioned, we've over time generated capital with capital injections from the National Treasury as well as profitability of 5.3 billion rand, and that is the funding profile of the organization. The next few slides details a few balance sheet numbers, which I'm not going to spend too much time on.
Which slide is that?
Slide 24, Chair. Slide 24 shows a few pie charts and bar charts reflecting the non-performing loans or the problematic loans of the organization. This slide points out that the non-performing loan ratio, which is noted as stage 3, or stage 3 non-performing loans, the little red block, that non-performing loan ratio reduced from 8.8% of the total portfolio, currently sitting at around 6.7% for the total bank. So an encouraging improvement in the quality of the loan book that's been achieved over the last 3 years. The pie chart on the left-hand top side of the slide shows the position as at the end of December 2017, the reference to quarter 3, 2018, G. The next slide, slides from slide 25 to slide 25 and 26. As a bank that, as I mentioned, is more or less funded the same way that the commercial bank is funded, the Land Bank is not regulated by the Reserve Bank. The Land Bank has its own act, the Land Bank Act, but we voluntarily adopted a number of regulated bank principles and ratios, which we also report. It provides transparency to our funders that the Land Bank is run on a basis similar to a regulated commercial bank. It provides comparison that we can be compared to other DFIs and commercial banks. And it also shows the strength of the balance sheet of the organization. So reference in those slides is made to a capital adequacy ratio, a net stable funding ratio, and the liquidity cover ratio, which are all ratios that are being calculated and reported to the Reserve Bank by regulated banks. All these ratios are being externally validated by any one of the four professional services firms on an annual basis to ensure that there's some validity in the numbers and integrity in the numbers, and it's not numbers that we randomly report to make a point. We have specific minimum levels that we've agreed with our funders, and we ensure that we exceed those minimum levels on a continuous basis because that ensures that we can get further support from our funders. Okay, then briefly on slide 27, that shows a representation of the diversification of the funding base of the Land Bank. The bar chart in the bottom half of the slide, Jay, shows that as at the end of the December 2017, that's the last bar chart, the bank has raised approximately a quarter of its liabilities from the PIC and the Reserve Bank or the CPD, which compares very favorably to the fact that the PIC generally funds somewhere between 50% and two-thirds of the liabilities of SOEs. So we're quite successful in diversifying our funding base, attracting a lot of funders. If one looks at the various columns in the table above the chart, there's reference to commercial banks, foreign banks, institutional investors, multilateral investors, other SOEs that from time to time invest some of their surplus funding in the land bank. So we attract a number of funding and funders, and just to reiterate, the funding is raised without any government guarantee supporting it. So it's on the, based on the strength of the land bank's balance sheet. The facilities that we've raised from the European Investment Bank and the KfW, the German Investment Bank, the long-term facilities, those are not incorporated in this slide because those facilities were only raised in the new financial year, not in the 2017 financial year. Chair, the next few slides, Mr. Molotov made reference to how reliant the land bank was on short-term funding. Now, short-term funding implies funding with a maturity date of less than 12 months, so we need to repay the investors within the next 12 months, which is problematic if you fund assets in the agricultural sector, mortgage loans, term loans with 5, 10, 15 and 20 year maturity. So if you receive your cash from the clients over a 20 year period, but you need to repay your funders in the next year, there's obviously a cash flow mismatch. So that reliance on short term funding at times when TP and I joined the bank, at times more than 80% of the bank's funding matured within a 12 month period. That's a incredibly high liquidity risk if you have to repay 80% of your liabilities over the next 12 months. So over the last 3 years, we've tried to lengthen that funding profile or to reduce the reliance on short-term funding by raising longer-term facilities from asset managers and investors in the organization. So at this stage, and that is that's shown, Chair, Slide 30 shows the current funding profile. That's the pie chart on the top right-hand side of the slide. There's a red portion that shows a percentage of 44.7%. So we've reduced that amount of short-term funding, Chair, from more than 80% to less than 45% over the last 3 years, during a period where that was characterized by a drought affecting the agricultural sector. There's from SAE perspective, you are generally found guilty by association. I usually make the point that if one of our main mobile companies in the country gets a fine in Nigeria, we generally would not believe that the other mobile companies would also receive similar fines in other parts of the world. Unfortunately, if one SOE experienced governance failures, the general sentiment is that all SOEs would experience governance failures. So if there are concerns about SOEs, then all SOEs battle to raise funding. So irrespective of that, we have achieved, it's a significant achievement of the organization to continue to raise term funding on this basis. Chair, just in summary from a financial sustainability point of view, and I acknowledge that financial sustainability is not the only qualification or criteria for development funding institution, but the Land Bank is a profitable organization. It has generated profits, continuous profits for the last, since about the 2009 financial year. Unqualified audit reports. We have the same external credit rating from Moody's that is assigned to commercial banks, the DBS and the IDC, the same long-term foreign currency rating that the sovereign has, acknowledgement from the rating agencies as well. Unqualified audit reports that we've achieved for the last 8 consecutive years. And in addition to that, a strong sustainable balance sheet that builds a solid foundation to enable the organization to continue to execute its mandate, to support emerging farmers. We have raised sufficient, we have raised funding that we can use to support emerging farmers, not at 0%, or at 2%, or at 4%, or at 6%, but at rates that we can ensure that there's sustainability in the business and also to support the commercial agricultural sector. Thank you, Chair.
Really the conclusion is really summarized in slide 3-2 of our presentation. And that is that looking forward, Chair, our focus remains on increasing the number and value of transactions that are transformational and inclusive in nature. When you look at our loan portfolio, that is the single biggest challenge that we have. We are responding to it, we believe, in a very meaningful way of promoting greater inclusivity within the constraints that we have as an institution. 2, ensuring the long-term financial sustainability of the organization. That remains the focus. 3, promoting the culture of good governance and ethics. 4, maintaining and improving our risk management practices, strengthening our relationships with the stakeholders, the treasury, the departments, the line departments of land and agriculture and the provinces, continuing to build institutional capacity by recruiting and developing skill sets that we require as an organization. We fish from the same pond as other development finance institutions as well as the banks when it comes to banking skills, credit skills, financial skills and so on. And then of course lastly and indeed but not least is our efforts, and we are beginning to make moves in this regard of working together with the farming sector to embrace more climate resilient practices, you know, like investing in better usage of water or alternative energy, better use of chemicals so that they don't translate into soil degradations and so on. That is why, Chairperson, one of the things that Benny might have touched on is that recently, like a month ago, we signed a special purpose financing facility with the European Investment Bank, whose use is nothing else but climate change, climate adaptation, and other resilience initiatives. So when we go out there and meet with our clients and farmers, we can make propositions regarding, hey, can you improve your irrigation methods so you save water, or and so on and so on. So in summary, Chair, I think I should stop there and say we are grateful for the committee for listening to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mulatu, and your team. Just on your last sentence, improve on your irrigation, blah, 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 blah. Then you must be educated how to do it. That's important. Looking at your picture here, slide 33, these people must move up. Then we are succeeding. Farmers in this section must become commercial farmers. Then we are succeeding, because then are they contributing to the economy. And this morning's good news is a GDP growth of 3.1%. Why? Because of agriculture. That's in the second part of the press release. It was the same in the previous quarter. Yes, so agriculture can be a game changer. Absolutely correct. Just a remark on the rain. You said it started raining in 2016. Well, in the western part of Northern Cape, it didn't rain in 2016 nor 2017 in the western part. That's why the Namakwa area is a disaster. It's like this table, there's nothing. It's my constituency. If you take the map of South Africa and you put a rural there from Messina to Simonstown, the rain falls on the eastern side of the N1. On the western side is dry. And I saw it again on Sunday when I flew back from a funeral from Upington to Cape Town. It's devastating. Absolutely devastating. So that is the real picture we are working with. It's good to get this presentation, but we have to go to the reality. Honourable members, I'm going to give each, we are 11 members here, I'm going to give each one 2 minutes, that's 22 minutes for questions. Honourable Tandi.
She says she wants to raise something before I come in, Chair.
Chair, if you can allow me.
Pardon?
I just want to raise something.
You want to ask a question?
No, it's not a question. It's a request that an annual report, without us being taken into confidence, about the auditor's report findings. I feel that their summary is incomplete. Maybe somewhere in their presentation they should have provided a slide where they should be reporting back to Parliament on the findings of the Auditor General report. If they can do that, then I will personally feel that the report is complete. But for now, I feel that it's incomplete. Thank you.
Excellent input there. Who else?
When we deal with organizations that deals with development finance, we don't have to deal with them over 2 minutes, you know.
We don't have to?
I'm saying how I wish that when we deal with organizations that deals with development finance, we don't deal with it over 2 minutes.
But why can't you just propose, Tandy, that the proposal of the chairperson that you must speak for 2 minutes must be rejected and then you must speak for
just 1, 2, 3, 4, your questions.
Yeah. Give your questions.
You know, Floyd has not been around. Now we come with this excitement.
We agreed that
he's
we
so
want
excited.
To adjourn this meeting. Order, please.
I can take him on, and you know me very well. So he's not going to play this.
When we start,
chicks and wasting time.
Members.
He's wasting time.
Honorable members, if you want to listen to me, just say so. If you don't want to listen, say so as well. We agreed we're going to adjourn this meeting between 12:15 and 12:30.
Chair,
if you want
I'm not
to revise
questioning
that decision,
that.
Then please do it.
I'm not questioning that. I'm saying we need to find a way to have time.
Yes.
To deal with this. It's very important. Land bank is not
problem.
Just any other SOE.
No problem.
So leave the nonsense that Fred was doing here.
Please put your question.
Chair, I'm interested to know what the land bank is going to do to assist the poultry industry that is susceptible to diseases. For instance, if you look at listeriosis, it affects more of that industry as opposed to any other industry. And I have always observed, for instance, how the ostrich industry used to be affected in the past. And if you look at one of the commodities that South Africa exports in the African market, it's either beef or chicken. Now, we will have to have a strategy on not just providing a percentage in terms of their premiums of their insurances, but to have a strategy to help them to circumvent such challenges. Because even if you can give them premiums, even if you can provide any other seed funding, if they are still susceptible to diseases, it means your export market will be killed. Even your local market will be killed because they will not be able to provide that basic commodity to society. Secondly, I hold a view that we shouldn't operate like a commercial bank if we are a developmental bank. Sometimes we worry more about the balance sheet than what we're supposed to provide as development finance. And that's what I've seen South African state-owned enterprises have been doing, far more different from how the Chinese SOEs operate. We'll have to find a model that we don't necessarily look at profitability, but we look at liquidity to be able to sustain the project that we need to deal with, so that we don't just look at it from a financial point of view, but we look at the whole thing from a developmental point of view. So liquidity is, but profitability no. Certainly, Chair. The presentation to me sounded contradictory when you said that you don't do state guarantees. But when you look at the fact that you get your funding from PIC, it might not be, in a legal term, a guarantee. But the interest that you draw from PIC will not be the same if you went to any other commercial bank that will have loaned you. I don't know, you'll have to explain the interest that you pay back to to PIC as compared to any other institution that might be from Europe and elsewhere. So the last one, because I don't have much time, I'm interested in this project in the Free State. I happen to be from the Free State. I'd love to see the project and see whether, in terms of smallholder farmers, how they benefit, because we have seen many projects that has been suggested. But if you look at benefit models, they have not necessarily benefited those who are smallholder farmers. They have benefited those who are your anchor farmers, and you have not necessarily monitored the distribution to those who need to benefit and become upcoming. So I'm interested even to visit so that we can see the success rate of that scheme that you have established. Chair, let me pause here because we don't have enough time.
Thank you, Honourable Lee.
Thank you very much to the Land Bank for your presentation. I really feel that it's important that we congratulate you on the turnaround that you've achieved in a very, very short period of time. So I think that's commendable. And the fact that you get lumped with other SOEs is probably because you're an outlier, and that so many SOEs indeed are huge risks to South Africa. And so well done, and we look forward to seeing progress with that. The question of the ongoing drought has been raised by two other speakers. Are you at all concerned about that in terms of your risk in those areas which continue to be drought stricken? The question of the project in the Free State, how long has it been going for? You guys have been involved, I gather, for the last 2 or 3 years. Is it older than that? Because there's a history of failure of these projects, and if this one works, then surely there must be lessons to be learnt from it. There was some hint of impropriety a couple of months ago with regard to your insurance CEO and a tender process involving livestock feed. You may want to comment on that, but the additional question is, how does this whole livestock feed tender thing fit into your model, your banking model? That to me I found quite interesting. Most of your funding is not guaranteed by the government. How much is, and are we running it down? Are we able to reduce that to nil and take the risk out of the taxpayers' pocket? Because we're sitting at huge levels of liabilities, government guarantee liabilities, and other SOEs, which we need to start pushing down as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Honourable Lees. Honourable Peace.
Thanks, Chair. I thought you were going to give them an opportunity to present.
We're going there. We take the questions, and
okay.
The last part is the reply.
Page 12 of the fancy documents, not the summarized version, you've highlighted that you have 262 female farmers with a loan amounting to 161 million. I want to know what is the total budget. I'm sorry, I might have missed it somewhere. And then what informs the 162? And what will be important for us as politicians is the demographics. Is that right, Rosemary? Demographics.
Yeah.
To know how many blacks, how many whites, how many Indians and colors are benefiting. Well, it goes on to also say youth somewhere, I don't remember where. And then it will also be important to know in which provinces. And whether are they able to service their loans, coupled to the issue of the drought, how has that affected women in particular. And what is their total budget for disaster? Do they also budget for disaster? I think it will be important that we know that. On page 70, I'm sorry, I'm not organized. Conflict of interest. If you can share with us, where do you publicize your declarations? Where can we get that in order for us to know whether your board members, are they doing business with the institution, or their families are benefiting? We don't want surprises. One day you are paraded on television, we hear that you have funded your own immediate relatives. If that is happening, we need to know now so that we can stop it. Attendance of board meetings. There's a person by Advocate Kosia, he only attended 2 meetings. I don't know what informs that. Oh no, he only serves in two committees. But his attendance of meetings in 2 committees are there. I don't know what is the allocation, what informs that. Shall let me pause for now, as I'm still searching for my other questions. Let me pause for now.
Thank you, Honorable Mabi. Honorable Dr. Blanche.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by echoing what the Honorable Lees said to the people here. I think they are a shining example, and maybe they should outsource their skills to the other SOEs, maybe how to manage something like this properly. Chairperson, I was just wondering, maybe I missed that, what is the percentage of that bad debt that you have, and how do you deal with that once you get to the point that it's clear that you will not be able to recover that? Secondly, Chairperson, my second question is, how many successful independent farmers have you been able to assist, let's say, over the last financial year, the part that is done now already? And Chairperson, just lastly, the example that was raised about the 50 million rand and the shortfall of the 15, I was just wondering, is it maybe possible that, or is it not your business to get other participants to come into, you know, also to join forces and allow such a project to go forward? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Blanche, Honorable Sprungu, then Honorable Floyd, and then Honorable Sheila.
Thank you, Chairperson. Landbank, what is your role with regard to alleviating poverty which was caused by drought, especially to those that cannot afford insurances? Do you lend a helping hand with the supply of feeding materials, especially during difficult times? 2, in KwaZulu-Natal, many workers lost their jobs in poultry industry because of the closure of the factories. What role do you play to bring back those poultry industries that were closed because of the importing poultry meat from Brazil and other countries? Last, how do you assist the emerging farmers to become commercial farmers, especially those that come from the former homelands
that do not have even the title deeds, that still have PTOs from the chiefs. Thank you.
Thank you, Uncle Floyd.
No, thanks, Chairperson. So we adopted the resolution, a motion in Parliament on the 27th of February that is going to culminate in the expropriation of land without compensation. So I'm sure as a land bank, you would have interest in that. But one thing which is certain, and you must never misunderstand or must never get or to listen to any assurance from anyone, is that by the 30th of August, when we table a report as the Constitutional Review Committee to Parliament, we're going to be having a clear framework on expropriation of land without compensation. What are the implications to the land bank? How much money have you borrowed people to go and buy land? And what will be the implications once we begin to expropriate all land without compensation? Because we're going to do it, noting that majority of us here, of represented parties, agree that we should expropriate land without compensation. And perhaps if you can't give that response now, can we be given a detailed response of who are the beneficiaries of land bank? What is their race? What is their gender? What is their age? Where do they come from? And in what sectors are they operating? Do they have fully independent agricultural projects, or are they staff riding on to established business as being shareholders and all of those things? So that is what we might need a detailed response on, like, so that with, but also what is the impact of the land bank in changing the face of food producers in South Africa? There's a statistic that very few farmers, if not less than 100 farmers, produce more than 80% of food in South Africa, and those 100 farmers are white. What is the contribution of land bank in changing the face of food producers in South Africa? Is there any prospect of changing that much more significantly? Maybe I need a detailed explanation on how do you deal with the issue of sureties, like all the whole bank, normal bank practices, when black people who do not have anything come to ask for assistance from you, who do not have any surety or any guarantees or any collateral that they can present to you, what do you do? They've got a comprehensive agricultural program, but they do not have anything to guarantee you to assure it. And can you perhaps clarify the agreement that we have with the PIC? What is the nature of the agreement? How much money has the PIC advanced to you? What is the agreement? And how are you going to deal with those aspects? I think that is the issue that wanted to raise. Thank you.
Honorable Sheila, and then Honorable Source Controller Shipping.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation by the Land Bank. I must declare that corporate governance is very important to me because I am an accountant by profession.
Yeah.
And from 1975 to 1994, I have read many financial statements and balance sheets audited in the private sector before I came to Parliament. I remember one balance sheet of a filling station which had a clean, it was a clean audit report, but it went down the drain because it did not have enough petrol to service its clients.
But whatever they were selling, they did it very well according to their books. So I am looking at you as a developmental institution. I'm not very impressed if you tell me that you are very strict with your corporate governance. But being a rural woman who came to Parliament in 1994, sent by rural women, if I don't see development, support for a lot of rural women in agriculture, I don't think your clean corporate governance impresses me. And I was just looking at you guys, there's no women there. And I was just imagining that if I go there as a rural woman, who am I going to talk to? All these men will in very expensive ties are going to intimidate me. Transformation as a developmental institution, you must not only be said to be transforming, but you must be seen to be doing that. Your appearance does not tell that story.
Thanks, Chairperson. Morning, everybody. Chair, you know, more often we do make pronouncements. The President made a pronouncement in SONA. The Economic Freedom Fighters sponsored a motion on expropriation of land without compensation. Now, when these pronouncements are made by Parliament, and we continue to say, I concur with Honorable Shivambu on what he said, but you know, more often we give officials too much space and time to react to pronouncements made by Parliament, and dragging your feet on this matter will not assist any process, and the speedy response to this issue would assist very much. Now, coming to your slide, slide 12, you know, when you say we continue, you know, you pride yourselves that you continue to receive unqualified audit outcome, and one wonders, you know, an unqualified audit outcome may come with matters of emphasis and all that, and it's a continuation of receiving unqualified, and you don't graduate to another level of a clean audit. It's worrisome with the type of governance issues that you alluded to. Now, coming to your slide 13. You say new jobs were created, because you say our country is faced with unemployment, poverty, and inequality. Now one wonders what type of jobs are these, temporary jobs. What constitute these jobs? Is it young people, old people, black, white? Is there any movement to ensure that the unemployed youth in this country get into this field of the jobs that you created? The other aspect is on the same slide, on the 2.4 billion growth in your loan book, and you talk about, you know, this is for the transformative lenders and all that. That's how you put it. And my question is, Are you having in this category of people that you lend, the previously disadvantaged, the emerging farmers? And is there any methodology that you have and that you have put in place to ensure that those who have been given the money in the form of a loan, they do return the money to the bank? And what steps have you taken if indeed the money was not returned. The other issue on the same slide, you spoke about Black Brokers Development Program, but I don't get a sense of how far you have moved in terms of that you didn't have black brokers in terms of percentages. How many have you done to date to ensure that they get into that market that they could not penetrate, black people? Now, more often in this irrigated land that you are speaking about, I know some areas where I come from in the Northwest, that in a way where there is a plenty of water, you see communities suffering with drinking water, because on the way you have rivers that get to be blocked by farmers, and they irrigate and they do that. Who are the beneficiaries of this irrigated land, and to what extent are they being charged, and what is the benefit of the land bank insofar as this irrigated land is? Thank you, Chairperson. These were my few comments that I wanted to make insofar as this is concerned. Thank you.
The biggest irrigation scheme in the southern hemisphere is between Warrington and Tawoong.
Yes.
There you'll find it. 483 farmers. It was my former constituency in the third parliament. You may start replying, are you part of the CEO initiative that will create 1 million internships? It was announced on the 4th of July 2017, the morning 8 o'clock, by Mr. Stephen Castle of Investec. And His Excellency the President also referred to it in the State of the Nation address. Just want to hear, because the internships focus on young people. You may start replying. I'm going to give you time until 12 o'clock, 10 minutes past 12.
I just want to take some few governance questions.
The one on the audit report.
Sorry. Yeah, I've just a few questions and I'll get out of the way and leave the rest of the team to deal with those issues. Chairperson, there was a question on the conflict of interest of board members.
Yeah.
The position of the land bank is very clear. No board member would submit an application for funding with the land bank and receive a funding. That's the position of the land bank. So any other conflict of interest that we might talk about, to use a practical example, if we have a board member who sits on another entity, for instance the PIC, and we are dealing with the matter of the we are dealing with funding from the PIC. That's the type of conflict we're talking about. It's not where a member is deriving personal benefit from that transaction. So in terms of our policy, I need to assure board members that it's not allowed. No board member, my wife, my children are not allowed to submit any application with the land bank for funding. So we need to get that out of the way.
And the same applies to staff members.
Yes.
Just add one thing. The principle of conflict of interest for board members is also regulated by the Land Bank Act, specifically. The process it's completely something that from a regulatory point of view is also not likely to happen.
Okay. Chairperson, let us run through these issues quickly. The next one would be, there was about our appearance. I know it was said even in the introduction. I feel like an endangered species at the land bank. I'm the only man in the board of the land bank as we speak currently. The rest are women. I'm talking about board members. I'm not talking about the executive. At the level of the executive, there are three women who are at the level of the executive. But at the level of the board, when I joined, there were three men, and all of them have left the bank, and I'm the only man remaining on the board. So I just want to get that out of the way, that about our appearance.
Maybe
Yeah. So. I.
I feel like an endangered species, and there must be empowerment of the male species here. So the issue of the MD, I think my colleagues will go into detail about it. I just want to assure honourable members that the MD of the managing director of the insurance company excused himself from all deliberations on investment related matters from the bank side, not from the insurance company side. The last meeting I attended of the investment committee, because I'm a member of the investment committee, he excuses himself from that. But they can go into, we dealt with his matter and responded to National Treasury with regards to the matter that was reported by the Maiden Guardian, I suppose, with regards to the MD. They will go into the detail about that. I don't know whether we need to allow them to go into detail before we forget this particular matter. Can I just conclude and then they will go? Okay. The Chairperson, just two last matters. The issue about empowerment, we are very serious about empowerment. To the extent that we have got an empowerment, an equity framework, empowerment framework that we have adopted as a bank, and the CEO can go at length about this matter. When we go and invest into a farm, for instance, in a project, an empowerment project, we insist that the workers of that farm benefit. We have a trust. We insist that there be a trust for the workers, and they get carried along into that equity framework of investment. So we really insist on employees of those entities benefiting when we go for some equity investment. The last one on expropriation without compensation. We are a state-owned bank. We take note of the decision that was taken by Parliament, and when there's ever, we are bankers. Bankers deal with risk. They cost the risk, they analyze the risk, and when there's a change in political landscape, we have to adjust and deal with the matters accordingly. And obviously, we would want to raise with our political principle. If there are any other risks that have been posed to the sustainability of the bank, we'll put those things on the table for our political principle to consider. And so we have no issues with the with what we know what we've said, and we are bankers. We deal with risk, and we'll deal with that risk when the time arises accordingly. So when we are required to report on the funding to various entities, will oblige. We have nothing to hide in our transactions. I just dealt with the issues that I felt are important to from the board side. I'm going to hand over to my colleagues to deal with the rest of the questions.
If I can start with the general.
Yeah. Can we take them one at a time, then? Yeah. Okay. I've sort of written everything down, so we'll take one at a time. And indeed, the very very first one is the AG matter.
Members, apologies for not emphasizing that in the presentation, but the report is in the annual report of the bank. There were two emphasis of matters raised in the report. The one matter relating to a procurement issue where, in terms of procurement process, the bank has to ensure that it takes the most affordable quote and also confirm at the time of procurement the BBBE requirements of the service providers. In this specific instance, the bank did not in all instances at the point of procurement confirm the BBBE requirements of the service provider. We took consistently the cheapest, most affordable service provider. Now, if one considers the scorecard allocation from a procurement perspective, 80% of the decision is based on affordability and 20% is based on BBBE requirements. So the Auditor General raised that. We subsequently went back and considered the BBBE requirements. If we considered that, our decision would not have changed. But that result is more a technical issue than a bank receives value for money in all instances. It's not fraudulent expenditure. It's purely that at the point of the procurement activities, the BBBE profile of the service provider wasn't confirmed during the under review. The second issue raised was
just to confirm that we have since changed procedure, changed process, so that particular confirmation gets done at the point of procurement.
And the second issue was raised with regard to an appointment of a senior official of the organization, where the credit and criminal verification that was done on the specific official was found to be fraudulent, and the official was not honest in declaring the existence of a criminal record that was detected during the audit after detecting that the official in question resigned. So those were the two matters raised in the audit report. Other than that, there were no issues highlighted in the audit general report, and in all material instances, the outcome was satisfactory.
Chair, if I may, and please, my colleagues, you will help me where I fall short in terms of the other things. The poultry industry, which, yes, over the past number of years came under pressure, particularly from a disease effect, is better now, but it remains at risk and susceptible. Now, the Department of Agriculture runs the programs relating to helping the poultry industry to manage risk of disease. So in other words, this thing of having chemicals around the plants and ensuring that people who come in and go out sanitize themselves, I don't know what is the right word, and so on. So there is that particular capability on the part of the Department of Agriculture. What we try and do at the bank through our team of agricultural economists, but we only serve our clients, is to visit their farms, perform technical assessment of their farming operations, because what we have come to learn is that very often the diseases that inflict birds, particularly the egg-laying farms in recent months, were as a result of birds flying into the houses and so on. So the best we can do from a financial institution perspective is to then make recommendations for people to say, look, you need to improve your infrastructure by improving the security environment around the farms, and in the process of doing so, funding will be needed, and indeed we can consider financial assistance. So it's more a technical infrastructure intervention that we look into. We still believe that it is important that that particular proposal around insurance coverage be considered, because if we could do that, then it means in addition to additional risk mitigation measures like managing the risk of contamination and improving the infrastructure, at least there could be a third level backstop in the form of insurance coverage and so on. So that is what we are doing in that regard. We have worked a lot with our clients, but some of the, and I'll come to that question later on, some of the businesses who are not our clients have indeed really lost production and jobs have been lost and so on and so on. It is difficult for us to intervene across the entire industry. There's only about 400 or so of us who work at the land bank. But anyway, be that as it may. The second point, honorable member, around the issue of finances, profitability versus development impact and so on, I hear the message. And I'm glad that my colleague from the National Treasury is sitting at the back and listening. The fact is this, the truth is, entities such as ourselves are required to pay their way through so that they don't have to go run into the Treasury and ask for money and say, hey, we don't have money to pay salaries or to undertake our program. And so for an entity such as ourselves to be able to pay our way through, we need to generate certain levels of profitability. We must generate net earnings. Our income, less our operating costs, has to generate a surplus in such a way that we are able to carry through to the next financial year and so on and so on. However, that does not diminish the importance of the developmental impact, the employment creation, financing transformation, getting more entries and new businesses. That is why our plea is that we should be judged on both.
That is why you have that graph, I can't remember on which page it is, where we say the best way of judging a development institution is in terms of its financial dimension and its development impact dimension. Because your earnings then feed your capital base, you then build a layer of capital, which is what we need in order to have a balance sheet that is decent.
Now, the reference to operating like a commercial bank is purely from a funding point of view. If the bank receives government grants or is frequently capitalized, then it's a completely different ballgame, but we have to be, as TP mentioned, self-reliant. We raise money from banks and institutional investors, and they have protection mechanisms that's referred to as loan covenants. So if we want to borrow from any of the commercial banks, they want us to maintain a specific bad debt level, less than a specific bad debt level. We need to maintain a specific cost-to-income ratio level, a specific level of profitability, specific capital and funding ratios that we reported. And unfortunately, for as long as we are reliant on support from commercial funders, we need to play the game according to the rules that they provide us. So that's why we are forced to, by virtue of that, to ensure that we run a commercially sustainable business with low levels of bad debt, with levels of profitability, and a specific balance sheet structure. And that's the reference to, but irrespective of that, we have invested every year roughly 100 million rand of our own profits in granting subsidized lending to emerging farmers. We've got a 1 billion rand portfolio and we invest about 100 million rand amount a year in such a portfolio. So we still use our balance sheet to find ways to subsidize lending rates to emerging farmers and ensure that we can continue the support.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to get into this discussion. I hear the point you're making. To me, it's more about the ratios and how you're going to make sure that you remain a developmental institution without compromising that core mandate. Because the core mandate is your developmental goals, as opposed to your funding performance and so on. So that there's no appetite to want. And let me tell you why I was asking that specific question. It's because if you look at financial institutions that you want to borrow from, they will treat you in a corporate way.
Yes.
They will not accede to your developmental agenda. And I know I'm trying to create a debate, and that's not an intention. And I was happy when you say you borrow from the African Development Bank because of its developmental goals. Probably we need to relook at the financing institutions that we borrow from, so that we not treated like any other institution that must be commercialized. And that's the part, because that is going to delay your developmental agenda. Because if we can further probe to this extent, given your previous challenges, how many new entrants were you able to fund? You will understand why I'm asking this question. And I'm saying, just consider it. We might not have enough time to engage on it, but just take it into consideration as to how it will reflect later.
I think the point is well made,
Chair.
Okay. And then moving on, on the state guarantees, I hear the point that you're making. What we have agreed with the National Treasury is that we would use state guarantees that they have granted us, and they are very limited, to procure long-dated funding, because the African Development Bank, the World Bank, they require, as part of their way of funding, they require sovereign support for a borrowing entity. So we would be the borrowing entity, so they would require that. So we want to reserve the guarantee capacity for that purpose. And then in the local market, we trade on the strength of our asset quality and our balance sheet and so on. So, and by the way,
from a numbers point of view, on the guarantees point, our total liability portfolio at this stage is 40 billion rand. Only 3.2 billion is government guaranteed. 500 million to the African Development Bank, and then we raised a 2.7 billion domestic government guaranteed syndicated loan during 2015 when the bank was under severe liquidity stress. So we had no other option but to raise a guaranteed loan. That loan is one portion 7-year, one portion 6-year loan, so by 2021 and 2022 that will be fully repaid. Then we also utilized a further $1.3 billion to raise a loan from the World Bank. That's a 25-year loan, and that loan has not been utilized yet, but once we start utilizing it soon, then the $1.3 billion will start to be utilized. So by the end of the current financial year, the 2.7 plus a portion of the 1.3 billion and the African Development Bank 500 million would have been utilized. You're looking at somewhere between 3 and 4 billion rand of guarantees that would be utilized. But to emphasize, it's primarily used for African Development Bank multilateral organizations that require a guarantee. PIC funding. Our total PIC funding at this stage is about 10 billion rand. It's unfortunately members at commercial rates. We don't pay less to the PIC than what we pay to APSA or to Standard Bank. It's commercial terms. It's commercial paper, so it's between 1 month and 12 months. It's short-dated paper. But we pay the same rate to the PIC as we pay to any other funder that would fund us over that.
Can my colleagues hear that there is no better treatment for other SOEs, please?
There's no favoritism, unfortunately, from a PIC point of view.
I noted on the Honourable Blanche.
Sorry, Chairperson, just one short little question. When last did you appear, Chairperson, through you before the agricultural
committee? Actually, we were discussing that particular matter at breakfast this morning. And we haven't received an invitation from the subcommittee on agriculture. And I don't know if it is because our reporting line is to the National Treasury. Our supervising department is the Treasury. So, but the chairman was instructing us this morning to say whether that subcommittee invites us or not, we should make a request to them to come and have a presentation with them. Yes.
I'll speak to the select committee dealing with agriculture and the NCP chairperson this afternoon.
Yes.
So if I can start the ball rolling.
Okay. If I may, because there are a couple of things. Certainly, the we can arrange chairperson for members who would like to go and see Mr. Nixa Fontaine and the Imagine Farmers that we refer to in Kronstadt. And yes, indeed, because it's an experimental, it was a very experimental pilot model, I wouldn't be surprised if we have deficiencies. Let me explain. At the moment, the Imagine Farmers that we are supporting there are very much on the feet of the production cycle. In other words, the breeding of the cattle, feeding them and so on, up to a point where they are taken to feedlot. Then they get paid for their animal at that point. But there is value further down the chain, which in terms of the existing model, they are not necessarily beneficiaries in, because they don't have an ownership interest in those entities. So we have to start somewhere. And by the way, it is something that we did between ourselves, this particular farmer partner, and the emerging bank. There's no government involvement, not the province or agriculture or anybody like that. So it was a pilot that we ran. But we are happy to arrange for a visitation. We are concerned about the ongoing droughts in the affected areas. If I recall, Benny, please, if I get the numbers wrong, correct me. In the Western Cape, parts of the Northern Cape, I think of our total 44 billion rand by way of loans, approximately in the region of about
1.7 billion, of which at this stage about 100 million rand is what we classify as non-performing or problematic loans. We've got more than sufficient collateral in place from a credit point of view. Generally, one should separate the impact of any drought or any agricultural crisis on the economy and the sub-economy and that on the balance sheet of the land bank. There's not usually such a big correlation to say that if there's a drought in that area, the land banks will suffer dramatically. Depends on the nature of our specific exposures. We're not exposed to each and every farmer, obviously. Depends on the specific farmers we're exposed to. Our focus is more the support that we can provide. When we've identified the farmers, we mentioned that we have a 400 million drought relief facility where we grant
lower interest rates loans at a rate at an interest rate of prime is 3%. It's a loan that we need to repay to the IDC at some point in time. We still have about 70 million headroom available that we can grant further support. We will also ring fence 100 million rand of our own funds for the same facility. That we will extend loans to farmers impacted, but not only land bank clients, also clients that approach the bank with concerns. We will support them as well. Our interest lies in ensuring continuity of operations. Our interest is not in trying to start invoking legal processes and declaring something a bad debt and start with liquidation processes. So we're much more tolerant to look at extending carryover debt, extending interest and capital holidays for an extended period of time to ensure that we can relieve some of the cash flow pressure that the farmers experience. But irrespective of the process, we still follow a comprehensive credit assessment process. It's not that we are, because we don't receive grants, we can't hand out grants. The chairperson of the board made a point that we are bankers, so we still consider a risk. So yes, there's exposure. No, we're not overexposed from a land bank perspective to the Eastern, Western and Northern Cape. We stay close to our clients. We ensure that we can support and secure external support as and when required. And if necessary, we can use our draft relief facilities to provide further support to the farmers.
Just let's follow up on this. There's a literature that suggests that you'll be overexposed if you carry over debt in the long term. And examples have been made through Capitec that they've been practicing those. So I'm saying, well, you are experts, I'm not. Be careful of what it might bring,
sure,
in terms of your long-term loans going forward, so that when they're supposed to mature, you shouldn't find yourselves. I might not be there to ask that question as it happens 25 years down the line, but the impact, if there's literature that suggests it's possible, and there's a typical example of that, we might not like the source that exposed it, but
yes.
NRN was susceptible to that. It did exactly that, and that's why the bank had to, in the African bank context, had to, because of overexposure.
Yeah. So that point is well made. That is why the bank adopted new accounting standards, IFRS 9, and the classification of our loan book gets, on an annual basis, gets comprehensively audited, including practices such as rescheduling and things like that. Because you're right, Chairperson, it's very easy to hide numbers. Well, it's not easy. People try. I think people try, but certainly we have a robust audit practices by third parties, the AG themselves and private sector auditors.
Mr. Shibangu, I noted you, yeah, not just like Steinhoff.
Yes.
Then it hit you like a bang. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I was referring to Free State, especially Kwakwa, where I come from. Remember that place was marked as endowed by the former president. And people do not have anything. What I was saying is that during the drought, during the difficult times, do you lend a helping hand with regard to feeding their cattle because they die and they don't have anything to do with them? Thank you.
Chairperson, I was still coming to that question, but I can handle it.
Let's give the team the opportunity to reply to all the questions now, please. Yeah. Please.
Okay, I'll come to that. Then there was a question about, I don't know, maybe members are satisfied with the response that Mr. Molodu gave on the matter of the managing director of the insurance company. But really, the long and short of it is this. The managing director, long before he joined the Land Bank Insurance Company, had a family business, an agricultural business. I think what they do is they procure feed and they distribute it to farmers. A tender was issued not at the land bank, but in government.
I think through the Department of Agriculture and so on and so on. They submitted a bid and they won a bid as a business long before he joined the land bank. And so by the time he joined the bank, he already had that commercial arrangement, which he declared fully to the board upon being offered the job. And so when that particular matter came up, the requirement that came from the National Treasury was that he must resign from the board membership of that entity that is doing business with the Department of Agriculture, not with us. No employee of the bank is allowed to trade with the land bank. So that really that's the facts around it. So the Treasury was satisfied that upon his resignation from that board, that business is being managed by family members and employees and so on. It can trade with the state, like maybe the Department of Agriculture or provinces, but certainly it wouldn't do any business with the land bank because he works at the land bank at the moment in terms of policy. How much of our funding is, can we pull down the guarantees to zero? I think that has been touched on. We use them for long-dated financing. Loan to female farmers. I think the statistics are saying we over that this reporting year. I can't remember which page was that. So what was shown there are the number of female farmers that we supported through loans during the current financial year. And
just mention the figure.
We currently support 262 female farmers with loans of around 161 million. So it's a small number in the context of a 40 billion rand loan. But if I may say so, we are beginning to measure these development impact and transformation matrices. So perhaps what we will then commit to is to say, what was the number last year? What is it now? Are we getting better over time? But I think the point is well made. And then the further statistics around the provinces and so on and so on, I don't have them here. We don't have them there. We can prepare a summary in that regard.
Yeah, then you can email it to Mr. Inter.
Yes. The conflict of interest matter was handled and so on. I don't know if you wanted to advocate Kotsia attend.
Oh, yeah.
There was a question about advocate Kotsia and her attendance on the board. I'll ask Mr. Moloto.
Yes. The practice in the bank currently is that no board member would serve in more than two committees. For instance, I only serve in the investment committee and the human resource and social and ethics committee. So that's the practice. So I would I'm not sure whether that answers the question, but in relation to Advocate Kotsia, she was only sit in two committees. With regards to our attendance, the minister requires an evaluation of our as board members periodically. So we have to submit that, and they make a determination on whether they want to renew our membership based on our active involvement in the bank.
Yeah.
And Advocate Kotsia, in this instance, might have joined the bank at a later stage. Didn't join the bank at the same time with us. So I'm not sure whether the dates that have been noted there have taken that into consideration, that he joined the bank at a later stage.
Thank you, sir. And then the bad debt ratio is measured in terms of what is called the NPLs, non-performing loans ratio, NPL ratio. As Benny mentioned during the financial presentation, it peaked at around 10% during the drought period. But it has since pulled down to the current
6.5
today, around 6.5, and it follows agricultural conditions and things like that. Our appetite framework says we must do everything in our power to ensure that we don't breach the upper limit of 10%. It's specified in our risk appetite framework. So it's what we can stomach. And I know so observations do get made to say, where do the banks sit on that particular ratio? The problem is that it is often difficult to see the agricultural book in the banks. What you will see is an overall NPL figure of 3.6%, and you say, oh, APSA is a better manager of risk than Land Bank, but it includes mortgages and other things that are, from a risk perspective, much safer than agricultural lending. But we, our board is happy with the that appetite framework.
If I may, our actual bad debt write-offs is really limited. It's a small number because of what I explained previously, that we would explore every alternative possible before we actually write off an account. So in terms of monetary value, in the income statement itself, it's about somewhere between 5 and 10 million using rand. So it's really very low.
And then with regards to the 50, the co-funding example, yes, it's a good point. We have a responsibility to source money and try and close the gap. And very often we do that in partnership with other development finance institutions. The IDC, they have more appetite for equity investments, and we are more a debt financing organization. The same with the PIC, the development division within the PIC. The banks, and I'm not casting aspersions, would generally have appetite for a different class of risk, which is a little lower risk and things like that. So, I mean, one of the largest syndicated lending was to a co-op, one of the co-ops, and it was a 1.5 billion rand lending, of which we did about 600 million, and the banks took the other portion. So we do this co-financing, but we try and align our appetite with an institution that has appetite to do this kind of things. We still believe, Chairperson, for that lower end of the pyramid where you want to migrate your smallholder fund, there the country needs government assistance. Hence our proposal that some of the grants maybe in the Department of Agriculture could be repurposed to do this, which we have come to call blended financing.
Can I make a small...
It's a cash, it's a Lima Letsema, and it's the land care group. That's the three.
I always say I'm not an expert, they are, but they can help me to think. You see, the appetite risk that PSC takes is based on the shareholder money. But I hold a view. I once in my previous life said to banks, you are not prepared to do co-financing on an important project. I believe that if government institutions can change this appetite to be bolder, it can actually show the banks the possibility to do more investment in projects, as long as there's a guarantee that people who manage such projects are prudent and they understand and they've put a very good collateral. So I at 10% you close it to PSC and you deal with them. Well, I'm not saying anything. I'm saying you can actually show them because you carry the capacity to cushion anything that will happen, because I'm very cautious, because National Treasury is here when I'm saying that, because once there's a problem, they'll have to refinance. That's what I'm saying. I don't know, I'm too ambitious.
Yeah, the point is well made about sort of pushing boundaries a bit in terms of our risk appetite framework. So if I may, there were specific questions, and the questions read that alleviating poverty to those who are distressed, do we supply feeding material and so on and so on. The land bank does not supply feeding material. That is the scope of work for the Department of Agriculture. I don't know if rural development does. We don't have a grant program. That is why the message that we have delivered here today is that from a bank perspective, the facility that we put in place was a concessionary 400 million special purpose drought facility, which if people or farmers, and it was well publicized, they could approach our offices. It was priced at prime less 3, and it had a long grace period. So in other words, the person who take the loan today will only pay us in from 3 years and so 2 years down the line, and so on and so on. So we could only create a debt financing instrument with concessionary terms. So we don't supply feed and all that gets that. And so the lost jobs in poultry. My answer to this question earlier on was that
our response, sir, was only limited to our client population. We couldn't address the bigger problem in the wider sector. I suppose it's just a function of our capability, really. We can only do so much. But there was an industry response, isn't it, from government and what have you, and I would hope that some of those jobs are being clawed back now. Then specifically with regards to assisting emerging farmers in those former homeland areas, we do finance people who farm on traditional communal land. We do. In KZN, in Mpumalanga, those are the clients that I can remember.
Namakwa. Namakwa land.
We do finance the transactions that are on PT, on traditional non-freehold title land. I can't remember the statistics around the Eastern Free State area, to be honest with you.
Yes.
Where I come from,
a village called Namahati, where the chief, the king has just passed on, King Mupedi. The people are not funded. What I'm pleading from you is that they are still having PTOs instead of title deeds, so they can't access money from the banks with the PTOs. Permission to occupy. Therefore, I'm pleading that you should also lend a helping hand to them.
My proposal is that after this meeting you engage. In more detail, maybe make an appointment, a way forward.
Yes. So, moving on, the specific question around expropriation of land without compensation and what the implications are, Mr. Muloto touched on it, and I think this particular one, because it's such a recent development and we are still thinking it through, if you allow us, Chairperson and Honorable Shibambu, if we could prepare rather a written comprehensive response and submission to this committee.
Yes.
And that particular response, Mr. Muloto, you remember at the board meeting about a week ago, we have been requested that particular submission should then be endorsed by the board as an official land bank view on this matter and so on and so on. So I would rather we do
that. What time frame do you need for that?
We have a board meeting. We have a board meeting sometime in April.
Would it take a bit of time?
We have a board meeting sometime in April.
And I think it's very important for us to engage with also National Treasury, because the challenge that we're facing is that, for instance, I don't know what's following the discussion. Parliament is taking which is very loud and clear, but at this stage the detail is still in. But the detail has to be worked through. I assume Parliament is going to be conducting
hearings
on the amendment to the constitution. Not assuming it will be like that. It will be hearings. So there will be hearing on the constitution, the possibly the expropriation bill or whatever is required. So I think this, hence I don't want us to rush and say we'll be doing this thing quite immediately. Because we want to engage with the substance. And at this stage, the substance has to be clarified. I mean, if you follow the pronouncement that has been made by the President and various political parties, people are thinking that it's not going to be a land grab situation, where everybody's just going to be flogging and take over. It's going to be a managed process. So we are interested in knowing that managed process, and hence that's when I think we'll be able to unpack our views and say, throughout this managed process that you're talking about, as bankers, we deal with risk, there are things that you need to consider, and so that we all of us know the lay of the land. I think that's the critical matter.
Thank you, Chair. And then there were very important questions asked regarding what the land bank's contribution is with regards to transforming and really changing the face, I'm quoting the words used by the Honourable Member. It's a a question that we assist with and we live with it every day. If I may refer members to slide 34 of this presentation, there's a point that I would like to make, Chair, if you allow me, and that is that if you look at these numbers that are before us, these are numbers in rand value terms. In 2015, when I joined this organization, sorry, 2014, when I joined the land bank, of the total loan book of the bank that was held of approximately 34 billion or so, approximately 2 billion or rat of that could be classified as money that had been advanced to black people, companies that have significant black ownership, have higher levels of BE participation. We did this classification to tell ourselves and to bring ourselves to a sense of where are we with regards to this challenge of inclusion. And so we have set this particular path that you see before us, where we say from virtually nothing, we are anticipating that 30% of our investments, hopefully in the next 3 years or so, would be to companies, farming enterprises and agribusinesses that are majority black owned and or with a high B level of above 4 or 3 or so. Now, there are significant hurdles on the way, and this is really the message that I would like to leave with the committee. The first hurdle is to farm, there is need for land access. There are two sources of land access. One, through the market mechanisms where black people can buy land and we can finance them. It's the target over the next. The status quo at the moment is around 13%. No, the total financial rand value of the loan book, financial flows. Remember, Honorable Shivamu, when I joined there, nobody was looking at it. And I started counting and saying, where are we? And that's when we established that we were at a minuscule amount. And this is a number that we have to track and commit to, because unless we do that, how are we going to track transformation?
That's why this engagement is crucial.
But I really want to deliver the following message, Chair, and that is that there are two sources of land. It's either you get it as a black person by buying it from the market, from those who have it, or it gets awarded through either through the Department of Land Reform, whatever mechanism. At the moment, I hope the Department of Land Reform will also account. The Department of Land Reform has significant farm parcels that they have purchased that have not as yet been released for commercial production. That needs to happen. That's the first part. The second part is, and I was making this particular point yesterday at a discussion, that using the market mechanism, what we see very often is price values that are overstated. Farm valuations that are overvalued, and therefore those who have the land asking more than it is worth. And our specialists go there, we do valuations, and we say, oh, you're asking for 60 million. Sorry, in terms of our calculation, best case scenario, this is probably a 40 million rand worth of a farm. And the deal falls through, and then we get criticized a lot, and people send me emails and all that and all that and all that. But we can only do what we are supposed to do professionally. So the first hurdle, land access. The Department of Land Reform needs to release and release rapidly the land holdings that they have in their hands towards those who can farm it productively from the black community. The second point, which I will not over...
Can I just make a few points?
Yes, we've got 2 minutes left.
No, no, Chair, you see, this is a fundamental issue that we should have given more time to do. When I used to chair Public Works, and we dealt with expropriation of a bill, like donkey as a book, one of the fundamental issues that we identified then was the valuator, the problem to the valuator. And that's where Floyd's question becomes critical, as to how are we going to target. We already know that in terms of the market value, it has been blown out of proportion. Therefore, that's why we supported their motion on expropriation. But you see the disjuncture is not what he's trying to do with the 13% target. The issue is, and it's when, now my other view, that actually the land bank deserves to go back to the Department of Agriculture for alignment and synergy for implementation purposes and so on. That's my personal view that I hold, that once you bring it back, there will be alignment. Because I would have wanted to understand how do you quantify the need for your premium allocation that you want, but it can only be dealt with here. But when you come into implementation, if you get challenges that are unlocked in relation to land, your targets, if they are not in the APPs of the Department of Agriculture and Land, then they are not going to be achievable. So I'm not trying to pull it, but I'm saying you understand why it was important for him, Floyd, to raise it, but to also amplify, to say for us to be able, because he says it's only 13%. So maybe he needs to understand that for it to be able to be applicable even beyond 13%, then we need this alignment. Then we need also to add more in terms of what will be needed in an event that you can reach consensus on market value and so on. Because there are certain takers who want to, you know, I'm saying let's look at how we're going to formulate a report that will make a recommendation. I don't know at what level can we all agree, so that we agree with.
Thank you, sir. I noted all the menu.
The gentleman's trying to make 3 points. Let him make the 3 points and then let's take comments.
So the first one was around...
Can we wrap up in the next 7 minutes?
Land access, then the issue of gap in own equity to contribute to the funding. You remember the 50 gap that is the second one.
Yes. Just from memory, I can remember in the past 4-6 months, about 4 very interesting transactions which we simply could not conclude because we are happy with the viability and the structure of the project, but there's an equity gap, and so we are not able to close the deal. The third issue is market access arrangements. You know, we all know the history of the agricultural sector, where there were marketing boards and things like that. This was changed and so on. But unfortunately, access to these marketing channels by new entrants is a problem. I don't want to tell some horror stories that I hear about fruit farmers in some areas producing, and then at the end of the day, because they don't belong to a local marketing co-op or body of some sort, they take their product there and they are told, no, you can't deliver it here. Maybe it's once off and whatever, but all I'm saying is that the marketing channels, those who are new to the sector need to be assisted somehow to find their way in. Whether it is those, in the old days, there used to be abattoirs, state abattoirs. So we know we don't want to go back to that economic model, at least my thought. But in the current economic model, there has to be a very active program of opening up channels for marketing access. Just a couple of last points, Chairperson. The matter of the PIC was handled. Where people don't have shortages, it's tricky, but we have piloted a model in the sugarcane environment where we lend on the basis of a fixed term buyer offtake arrangement. So the producers of sugarcane will farm, and the sugar company has committed to buy specified volumes at a specified price over a specified period. This is normally from season to season. So in a situation like that, it is easy to structure a production finance because you lend on the basis of potential revenues that can be drawn from a signed up buying agreement. That's about only the best way. But very often the big buyers, whether it's, I shouldn't mention names, at times don't want to sign up to fixed term buying. They will guarantee volumes. They will say, I'll buy so much tonnage of maize or tonnage of meat, but subject to market prices.
And so it's a complicated, it's difficult to do. That's really my message. But we have piloted a couple of projects in that regard. The point has been noted about, by the way, one of the reasons why our two colleagues, the chief risk officer and the executive for commercial banking is not here, the two ladies, Loiso and Koni Guguche, is because they are here to evaluate cloud impacts. They are at our office in Cape Town, and they are spending the next 3 days or so driving around the farms to get a feel on the ground as to what is going on. But the point is well made. Expropriation, yes, we are going to the matter of audit. We will also provide details regarding employment creation, where geographies and things like that. The growth in the loan book, we will also dissect it in terms of where and which sectors and so on. Methodologies to ensure that people return their loan book. The first thing to do is to try and set up the loan in such a way that we don't set up people for failure. That's why if we believe they can only afford 10 million, we shouldn't give them 20 million. Because if we do that, then they will default first month. So it's about scoping the funding properly in the first instance. In the second instance, it's about ensuring that they have as much technical support as possible. And in all fairness, our counterparts in the co-ops, the big co-ops, the likes of Avgri, GWK, and TWK, they are helping us because we go to them and we say to them, guys, please help with agronomy services for livestock farmers, extension services, to do soil tests and to do production planning and so on, the capabilities that they have, so that the farmer really has the technical support to be able to farm successfully. If they do run into complications, the points that Benny was making earlier on, we try and resuscitate the business, restructure and so on and so on and so on. We run a very comprehensive portfolio management function to do all this function. We will provide the details around the brokers. I can't remember the exact numbers, Benny, how many of them, but we started from zero. There was no black broker serving the land bank insurance company. You have the number?
Yeah.
Okay.
18 black brokers. In the first year, they generated 5% of total premiums from a zero base. In our short-term business, we would expect the next year to be close to 10%. So it's a growing program. We're very proud of what we've achieved.
18 individuals or companies generating, at least for now, for a start, 5% of our gross written premium. And we are confident it will grow. Irrigated land and... you know, I think that
particular...
Yeah,
so that you have black fund managers, and can you
qualify? We'll come to the fund manager. Can I? Let me just finish off this one, if you can note that question. We can come back with the details regarding who are the beneficiaries in terms of who owns those irrigated farms that we have financed. But the question of whether water flow gets interrupted and therefore prejudicing or suffocating supplies to downstream communities, I would submit that is a question beyond us as an organization. It's a Department of Water Affairs type question, who are responsible for issuing licenses relating to abstraction and so on and so on. Am I, as the CEO, part of the CEO initiative chair? The last question. The CEO initiative has two structures. It has a structure made up of a few CEOs. Dr. Dan represents state financial institutions in there. Then they have work streams. And one of the work streams is around resuscitating the economy and so on. And I, together with my colleague Pagamani Hadebe, who's now at ESCOM, used to be at ABSA at the time, We co-chair the work stream on agricultural financing initiatives and so on. So we are working on submissions and things like that. So I don't participate at the presidential level. I participate at the doing the work level.
We are very interested to see what's the outcome. We want to see action.
Yes.
Yes, so that's what we want.
The last question was fund managers.
Fund managers invest in the lands, and we've got little control over that because they take the individual decisions. Where we allocate investments, our latest procurement was for service providers for a sinking fund. And they, part of our mandate is that more than 50% of the investment should be made with black-owned asset managers.
We are trying to push the envelope on that. By the way, as an institution, we don't have billions and billions to allocate like the peers, to be honest. So our allocations are generally a couple of tens of millions.
But I think land bank is part of the problem in South Africa. If 87% of the land bank is white people. No.
Over a hundred-year history of the organization.
We can but call them
it's 24 years now.
No. Order.
It's 24 years of so-called freedom now. And I think a part of the problem.
End of the chain of what I was saying, and then you wanted to block me. Now you want to speak more.
It's part of the problem. I think that we should just agree that it's part of the big problem that of reproducing the inequalities that divide the party. I think we'll have to deal with that at a separate level. Sure.
You are done with your reply. Thank you, Mr. Mulatu, and your team honoring this appointment with the meeting with the two committees. We're looking forward to engage with you later in the year. Definitely, yes. Thank you, members, and I wish you well for the debate this afternoon. Take the country forward. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
I thought about it.
Oh, you said you had them when they were
no, no,
when they were taking the mission.
Yeah,
of
course. I'll take it, okay?
Can I get one? Because I use an old one for myself, because I'm not doing it. That is on one day, even for me. So how are you going to distribute it?
This is where we're writing photocards. This is what we can do.
Yeah, what can you send me? No, it's fine, I'm looking. I'm not...
Put it back here. This is 1, 2, 3, 4.
27.
Okay, you saw that question that they were asking about
the application. No, it's really dealing with the management. It's not
about...
Yeah. No,
I can't
imagine
that point. And no, okay, no, do that. No, this was our analysis. But this is where we stopped.
Okay.
So here, what I was thinking, seems like we were thinking about appropriation came up. These are some of the things that we need to consider.
But I feel like even if you take it to the shareholders, after the board meeting, we'll say something.
They will say something.
Yeah.
So it's working properly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's why they didn't say that. I don't know why he played with the guy with EFF.
I don't know why I could see that.
Now, yeah, then I was interested. Because he knew he was out of line. I mean, he does that. Supposedly the media was not there in the ESCOM inquiry where Dr. Mkubani is appearing.
Is it?
But when the media is there, the chairperson will be sitting there. He'll be asking a question to him as an official sitting here. The media is there, he's looking at the media. That's when he likes performing. So now the media are you know, because they are all listening to the interrogation and of yes, it's appearing in front of the inquiry on ESCO. Which is opportunity.
It's the second time. Oh no, the last time he was here for SABC.
Yes, it was different.
That was okay, he's so arrogant.
Actually, he used to be a minister, remember?
I know.
The government of national unity.
And he's so arrogant.
But you can see how, that's what, you could see his relationship behind the brand. It was
great.
And Brian, when he was such an intelligent guy, I don't know what has to do with him. How could he have been so... Or can you show that was Grisabat at whatever place?
You remember when Brian was the executive officer of PIC?
Yes.
He was replacing a friend of mine, Nando Mlangu, who came from that position.
Yes.
The way he did it, I could just see that, like, for instance, okay, it's about himself, he doesn't care about what happens to him. And I can tell about the shenanigans that happened in PIC.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not new.
Yes, but I'm just saying, but he wasn't so upset.
No, 100%.
Now,
but the administration allowed it.
Yes.
I've always argued for like on this, but now it's what we bought them for.
That's like the support he got from the board, from the chapter.
So once that's for instance, okay, you've got all the support from all the quarters, okay, from the board to government.
Yeah, it's
you tell yourself for like this, okay, I can do anything.
Yeah. No, they're telling me, okay, I don't know where I met, but I think I
was in the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Oh, yeah.
For what?
Yes. That's it. Okay. Because I was like, it makes sense now.
I left the SOC before the guys that I left there.
Were you there with before the North Sea?
I came in November.
Yes, after the North Sea. Yes, after the North Sea left.
Okay. I tried to warn and
about the
people that I was using, but nobody was.
Okay.
Okay.
That
you
said this is telling you something.
No, no, no,
no. The Adam
Zari
were. The
Maclopo
were.
Just go
to the. But Mewaya was in, he was sitting, not a member of
my mother was a big, big, big. Secretary General, okay?
Same
generation.
Yes. My mom was in that executive.
Is it?
Yes. So they literally brought me up from Mewaya.
Small world. Small world. No, no, I know them all.
They're not young. Come to my.
I know them all.
Yes.
I know them all.
Yeah. I wonder how can they do it? Mewa, why you become their child too? Because they are just playing
obvious.
That thing. And then I went to school. Why here? I'm a builder. The
center. Yeah.
After English, get over for me. Then I stayed there. Before, yeah. Before I then came to I went back to Cape Town.
Funny thing is, I've got a niece who just completed the LLB in the she's working in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
She's one of the public interest law things, but also in the area, whatever. She's in Cape Town more often than she is in Johannesburg.
I stayed there for 3 months. The first month, because I was also doing a program called Graduate School of Business, right? So I, for that reason, I was staying in that mode. But once that exhaustion wore off, I just couldn't see. My dad was not impressed with me. When your people are asking us, what have you done? Just doesn't want to survive. First she went to the supermarket and dropped off groceries. She changed her strategy. Now she's going back to work. So let's tell them. So you did nothing.
Where's the EFF now? They wanted to meet the land bank. The EFF.
What's the EFF who are paying for my chain? I said I could have eaten. I'm not going to send them. Yeah, that's it. Later on, we disappointed. We didn't have to be your company. But that's how it is.
Yeah?
Because they don't tell me how they